Welcome to Tokyo Cheapo Podcast. Think Tokyo's expensive? Well, think again. All the best tips for visiting and living in Tokyo on a pittance. Cheap sushi, cheap sausages, cheap dates, cheap dogs, cheap hotels, cheap holidays, cheap sumo, cheap salads, cheap bikes, cheap booze, cheap chicken. Welcome, ladies, gentlemen, and cheapos, to another episode of the Tokyo Cheapo Podcast. Joining me today is the infamous cheapo, Greg Lane.
Howdy.
Howdy. Coming to you directly today from our favourite spot behind Midtown. In fact, we are demonstrating a top Tokyo cheapo tip today, which is
drinking al fresco. For cheapos, we're drinking rather pretentious drinks.
Yeah, I've got a Mai smoothie here, which is imported from Sweden, which is a bit over budget for normals.
And I'm drinking what the hell is this? It's like a branded beer from a French restaurant or something?
Putting to test the cheapo al fresco tip we mentioned last year at some point. So, my cheapo eat this week is the Maguro Ichiba, which is like tuna market, if you literally translate that to English. It's a chain of seafood donburi restaurants. Typically, you've got meals starting from just under 500 yen, and I guess you'd struggle to spend 1,000 yen any time of night or day in Maguro Ichiba. My favorite location is just near the south exit in Shibuya Station. It's a great place to go for lunch or dinner.
I think there's another one in Ginza, right? Between Ginza and Shinbashi, I think?
Yeah. There's quite a few around Tokyo. Yeah. So look out for Maguro Ichiba. Great place for some fresh fish, raw fish, and some rice. What have we got to report about Tokyo Cheapo in the last few weeks? We have a great piece of news.
What?
In that we have smashed through 1,000 likes.
Yeah! Yes.
So yeah, high five for that.
High five. We can actually do a high five. Yeah, that's a first, because this is actually the first show we've managed to actually be in the same place at the same time and record it. So
the same continent.
So before this, it's been all virtual high fives.
Yeah. Other news, we have a comment here on our sumo article from Mr. KCL84, and it reads,
"Hello, I'm going to Tokyo in early June, so we'll miss the tournament, but I'm wondering if there's any other way to see sumo in the off-season."
Right, well, it's I'm glad you asked that question. We actually have a new writer starting at Tokyo Cheapo very soon. His name is Mark Buckton. And he has been covering sumo in Japan for probably good on 10 years or more, I'm not sure. But he's actually going to write for us about going to sumo training and how you can do that for free. I'm not sure if it will actually involve being pounded by a giant sumo wrestler, but at the very least you can go and watch them and smell the sweat.
I hope it does involve getting pounded. That would be value for your zero yen.
You probably wouldn't be able to get pounded by the higher level wrestlers. They'd probably leave you to the 15-year-olds.
And, yeah, 10-year-olds.
Yeah.
Excellent. So there's our...
Yeah, so look forward to that.
So what have we got in store today, Greg?
Well, we're going to have a bit of a chat about accommodation options. Short-term accommodation, medium-term accommodation, and long-term accommodation.
Yeah. Let's start, though, talking about location. One of the hacks that could have saved me 2 years of relative boredom. When I first moved to Tokyo, I didn't really know many people here and had no idea where anything was. And it's such a huge place, you kind of get a pin and you pin it in a map and you think, okay, well, let's just try living there, which is a disaster. Basically, either you live somewhere really central or you live right on the edge of the city. Because if you live anywhere which is kind of beyond a sort of walking or easy cycling distance, then you're going to have to use public transport to get home, which brings into the problem of the last train. Around about 11:30, you're kind of having to make a dash for the train. Otherwise, you're talking about a night in a love hotel or an internet cafe or just wandering the streets.
I think it's easier to start in the center. I mean, it's much more expensive. There is a trade-off here. Start in the middle. You know, find short-term to medium-term accommodation, and then you can decide where to live after that. Because, you know, if you get stuck out in Saitama or Chiba or something, nothing against Chiba or Saitama, but it's not the kind of place where you want to get stuck on a two-year lease.
But basically, central Tokyo is a huge area. When we said talk about the middle, we're talking about living somewhere near, like, Shibuya. That's, for me, that's kind of like the the epicenter of what's interesting in Tokyo. But as you venture a few miles away, you know, you're talking about a 5 to 15 minute train journey, half an hour cycle, it just turns into suburbia, and it's the same all the way to the mountains or the sea. So you may as well live either in the middle, or you may as well just live right at the edge, because there's no huge difference.
In the mountains.
In the mountains, yeah.
Yeah, or next to the sea.
There's not really a huge difference between living somewhere, you know, like Mitaka or Saitama. Mm-hmm. It's basically suburbia.
Okay, so short-term accommodation, what kind of options do we have?
At the most expensive end, you've got the hotels. We've got a short list of cheapo hotels we recommend on the site. If you just look at the top navigation and click on hotels, there's a few there starting about 5,000 yen. And there's a kind of few family options which will break the 10,000 yen barrier.
Yeah. What do you think about the area? Because a lot of these places are located around Asakusa. Historically, it was actually the area where the laborers and things stayed. So there's actually like, there was just these cheap kind of DOS houses.
Yes, it's kind of okay for tourists because there's touristy stuff to see in Asakusa. Mm-hmm. But if you're kind of more interested in kind of nightlife or the modern part of Tokyo, I mean, specifically if you're interested in the nightlife, then you want to be nearer the kind of Shibuya, Roppongi area, because then you can just walk home. Appa, Party Hotel, that's a particular favorite.
If you're staying in Roppongi or Shibuya, or even near Tokyo Station, there's a lot of stuff that's walkable from there, whereas if you're staying out in Asakusa, there are things around the area, but you know, if you want to get out, then you're going to have to take a train every day. So
what's below the hotel offer on the price range?
Hostels?
Hostels, yes.
Yep. So what's the price range in hostels?
I guess somewhere between 2,000 to 4,000 a night. Again, that same page, we've got hotels and hostels. Plus there's a hostel bookers widget on our sidebar. What's the course of action if you want to go super cheap?
Well, I mean, the park right near where we are at the moment is quite nice. But I mean, if you want a roof over your head, then something like an internet cafe would be the place to go.
Which is, in fact, is the central focus of our 3 nights on 10,000 yen article.
Although we've had some advice that some internet cafes will not accept you unless you have a resident card. So, you know, perhaps they've had a bad experience with tourists, so they're a bit kind of hesitant to let people on a tourist visa stay. Probably just communication and misunderstandings.
I've met a few tourists who have stayed at. The kind of person that would go for staying in an internet cafe is probably someone up for a bit of adventure, so that
yes,
would be fine.
Yes, definitely. If you're a bit nervous about coming to Tokyo...
Or if you've got a family with you...
No, definitely not. Let's keep going.
So you've got a variety of shorter-term options, which is perhaps what you're going to do if you're moving here to live. You're going to have to
medium-term?
Start... medium-term
okay,
options.
Good.
Yes, get the facts straight. Out of all the cities I've been to around the world, I think Tokyo is... It's actually well-equipped for, you know, month or 3 month or up to 6 month stays. You've got what's called the monthly mansions or weekly mansions. And there's a whole stack of companies which their business model is basically short-term occupancy. Of particular note, there's a couple of major companies which are foreigner-friendly. They actually market towards foreigners. And the two most well-known are probably Leo Palace. We'll put a link to their website in the notes for the podcast. And Sakura House. Have you ever stayed in a Leo Palace?
I have. I used to live in a Leo Palace apartment. It was okay. They're cheap, definitely cheap. It was about 80,000 yen a month, and that was about a 30-minute train trip to Shinjuku.
Yeah.
So it had two bedrooms. It was about a 10-minute walk up a small mountain from the station. And the other thing to note about Leo Palace is the actual buildings themselves tend to be kind of cookie cutter. I think they build them with a steel frame and basically just, you know, throw a layer of paper on the outside, so that there's not much in the way of insulation or
sound insulation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you get to, you know, enjoy your neighbor's music and vacuum cleaning. And
I also stayed in a Leo Palace, but I had a crazy neighbor underneath who was just making noises at like 4 a.m. and laughing, and they did relocate us. After a few phone calls. Angry phone calls. They relocated us to the apartment a few blocks down. So,
so are we saying stay at Leo Palace? Or are we saying?
Well, just be wary that there might be some sounds coming through the wall.
Right.
But they did, you know, they did relocate me when I complained. There's also the option of doing some sort of share house. There's a site called Tokyo Share House, which has got a number of options for sharing with people. Just looking on Craigslist, this sometimes people do sublets, although it's not as common as like somewhere like New York or London. And then there's Airbnb. It's pretty rare to find a property on Airbnb.
Yeah, and a lot of them are actually non-Japanese, so a good proportion of them at least.
And they're quite expensive, so I wouldn't say that's definitely the cheapo option. Leo Paralis and Sakura House are certainly cheapo options.
Might be a good cheapo option for making money.
Yeah.
Airbnb.
No, business idea. It's a cheapo business idea.
Okay, so longer term options. Now, when you start getting to longer term accommodation, you start hitting a lot of the kind of the problems with the system in Japan. So
you're talking about the huge down payments you have to make.
Exactly. So typically in Japan, you'll have to pay key money. Which is
it's a gift.
Well, it's called. It's the thing. It's called reikin in Japanese, which means like polite gift money, I guess.
So you're giving the landlord a gift for the privilege of renting his apartment.
And it often amounts to usually amounts to 1 to 2 months rent. Also, you have to pay deposit 1 to 2 months, and also
an agency fee,
which is 1 to 2 months. So you know, you could end up paying 6 months rent in advance. You know, rent in advance as well. So I'm not sure if I mentioned that.
Deposit? Yeah, you didn't. Yeah.
No. So it could be seven or eight months.
7 months, which is perhaps enough for a down payment.
Well, yeah, exactly. You could almost buy a house with that kind of money. So, I guess our tip in this area is to check out something which we just featured on the site called UR Housing. And UR Housing is a government corporation. It's not exactly public housing, but their kind of mission is to revitalize urban areas. So the UR stands for Urban Renaissance. The rents are more or less market, or maybe slightly below. But the good thing is you don't have to pay any of this gift money. There's no agency fees, none of this rubbish. All you do is you pay 1 month rent in advance and 1 to 3 months rent for deposit. And the good thing is you get the deposit back at the end. The other interesting thing in Japan is you likely will never meet your landlord, because they'll go through a rental company. So they have these kind of rental company attack henchmen who kind of get sent around to your house and say, you know, they get you to sign a thing that's saying that I damaged the house beyond repair, and they're going to keep all your down payment. Of course, it's just, you know, covering the cost they should pay, you know, to maintain the apartment. But it's just the way it works. So UR Housing, if you do that, you can avoid all of that nonsense. If there's a downside, it's that they're very popular and they're very hard to get. So, you know, you have to get in there and you look at a few different places before you get something. And they tend to be in very large buildings. If you're looking for a little kind of cozy place, then it's probably not for you.
And I'm guessing they're probably not going to discriminate against you just for not being Japanese.
Well, they're not allowed to. It's in their kind of mission. They have to treat everyone equally.
Which is another one of the delights of renting apartments in Japan, is half of them, the landlord just will flat refuse to rent to anyone who's not Japanese. Apart from UR, I guess there are a few private landlords out there who are nice to deal with. I rented an apartment from a company called Advance International, got an American chap on the team, and their business model is basically renting to foreigners, and they've got a few hundred properties around Tokyo, so I'd recommend them. Yeah, then there's also looking on Craigslist, and I guess at the bottom of our recommendation pile is just kind of going through the front door and just looking at a standard Japanese real estate agent and seeing what's on their books.
The tip there, I guess, is just language, isn't it? A lot of people say that Japanese real estate agents discriminate, but it's really, it's more like profiling, I think. The assumption is that you can't speak or communicate in Japanese. If that's a problem, then you need to take someone with you who can communicate.
I've noticed that some places do have like a little Union Jack flag and a picture of their member of staff who can speak some English. So look out for places that have some sort of evidence that they speak English. You'll have a much easier transaction there. We'll go into more detail on some of those topics in later episodes, but there's a quick roundup on the accommodation options in Tokyo. So, a virtual high five to all you cheapos out there.
We do have one announcement.
Oh, yes.
Next weekend.
30th.
The 30th of March, we're having a cheapo get-together, a meetup. So what are the details, Chris?
So we're going to have a cheapo party in Yoyogi Koen, catching the end of the Sakura and Hanami, joining the Yoyogi Madness. So we're going to post details on the Facebook page, so do come and join us for some cheapo fun.
Right.
Yeah. Great. Anyway, thanks again for listening. Do send us your comments, feedback, and complaints. And me and Greg will see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Cheerio.
Dates, dogs, cheap hotels, cheap holidays, cheap sumo, cheap salads.